Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, January 18th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Paul Gotza, the director of the Brewers Association, and folks from the Alaskan Brewing Company will be here to talk beer. We'll hear about the Poetry Omnibus program from C.N. Murphy. Writer Clint Farr will tell us about his Beers of the North book signing. And we'll talk with photographer Ben Huff and Jackie Manning about Alaska Positive, an exhibit at the Alaska State Museum. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Currently 33 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Montana Congressman Ryan Zinke answered questions about land management and tribal issues Tuesday in Washington, D.C. Senators on the Energy and Natural Resources Committee heard testimony from President-elect Donald Trump's choice for Secretary of the Interior Department. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders asked Zinke what he would do to improve the lives of Native American people.
Sovereignty should mean something. When we say a nation is sovereign, it should have weight. Secondly,
stay on that one, because you're right. Sovereignty should mean something. What does that mean if you are, in fact, receive the nomination?
Well, I can tell you from the perspective of a Montana congressman, the paperwork, the bureaucracy within reservations far exceeds what's outside. And perhaps at one time we viewed the Indian nations as almost children-like, where we have to manage every aspect of their affairs, and it has affected their ability for self-determination.
Zinke says the Bureau of Indian Affairs should be better. He also vowed to address Indian health care and education. North Dakota Senator John Hoeven told the nominee the state has had a real challenge with the Dakota Access Pipeline protest, adding officers need help from federal law enforcement. Hoeven asked Zinke if confirmed, would he send BIA officers to North Dakota to work with state and local law enforcement. Zinke did not say yes or no, but commented that there are deep cultural ties and feelings there has not been fair consultation and partnership. Zinke says that voice needs to be listened to. Senators also asked Zinke to work on energy issues and revisit the recent designation of Bears Ears National Monument in Utah. The Montana congressman says he plans to restore trust with all Americans, including American Indians. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is applauding the publication of the Notice of Intent to require an environmental impact statement in the Federal Register. The notice opens the public scoping phase and invites people to comment on the Dakota Access LLC's request to grant an easement to cross Lake Oahe, North Dakota, which is on the Missouri River and owned by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The proposed crossing is about half a mile from the tribe's reservation boundary. In a statement, the tribe says it's encouraged that the Army Department is committed to evaluate the impacts of the pipeline to tribal treaty and water rights. The company building the pipeline, Energy Transfer Partners, has vowed to finish the project and has taken the issue to federal court. The notice by the Army Department was published today. A prominent and award-winning author in Canada is facing criticism. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, there are questions about his Aboriginal heritage.
Joseph Boyden won the prestigious Giller Prize for his 2008 novel, Through Black Spruce. He's won Canada's Governor General's Award and is a member of the Order of Canada. But recently, the Aboriginal People's Television Network joined the list of those questioning claims Boyden has made about his own Indigenous heritage. They say Boyden's statements about his family's connections to Aboriginal people seem to shift. Rebecca Tapabadong is the editor of Muskrat Magazine.
I think the problem was, for me, you know, over the years, is that he's been described as a shapeshifter in the sense that he's not been upfront or clear about what those roots are exactly and to which nation he comes from.
For his part, Boyden says he is mostly of Celtic heritage, but also has Nipmuc roots on his father's side and Ojibwe roots on his mother's. He also says he mistakenly said he was Métis, a term traditionally used to describe descendants of French traders and Indigenous women. He has also in the past referred to himself as Anishinaabe, which includes the Ojibwe, Odawa, and Algonquin peoples. To many of his critics, the issue has been more a question of who should be telling Indigenous stories and whether Boyden's success and awards have taken away opportunities from other Indigenous writers. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Utah Dene Bekea. Thank you, President Obama, for proclaiming Bears Ears a national monument, protecting ancestral lands, ensuring our people will continue to hunt, collect firewood and herbs, and hold ceremonies. Learn more at protectbearsears.org. When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Wednesday, January 18th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, and joining me now in the studio is a team from the Alaska Brewing Company, including Paul Gotza. He is the director of the Brewers Association. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks, Scott.
Also, Darren Jensen, marketing specialist. Welcome, Darren.
Thank you.
And Melissa Griffiths, also a marketing specialist. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thanks, Scott.
It's nice to have you all here. This is technically Alaska, or I should say AK Beer Week, right?
It's AK Beer Week, yes. We don't want to confuse people. We've got Alaskan Brewing is what we're from, and then we have tons of breweries in Alaska that are also participating in various locations.
Okay, and we have some fun events that I want to get to in a minute, but as part of all these celebrations and classes and probably talks and tastings, everything else, we have Paul Gotza here. Paul, tell me, what does the director of the Brewers Association do?
I do a lot of government affairs collectively for America's small brewers, the craft brewers, you know, the brew pubs, microbreweries, regional brewers like Alaska and all over the country. And so government affairs, do some PR work for them. We do a lot of technical education for our members, as well as running competitions and conferences and things like that.
Okay. When you say government affairs, what does that mean exactly?
It is, yes, the dark side. Sometimes I'm up on Capitol Hill lobbying to defend the rights of small brewers' ability to do business. But sometimes it's working with regulatory agencies. You know, beer is alcohol. It's a highly regulated industry with the Tax and Trade Bureau, with the FDA. So a lot of discussions with regulators.
Okay. What's on your radar right now? What are you talking most about, sort of thinking about the beer industry in the nation?
Growth. We have now passed 5,000 brewers in the country, and there's 7,000 permits for breweries in the country. So there's going to be another couple thousand brewers coming online in the next couple of years. And in 1980, there were 42 brewing companies with 89 breweries. So this has just been an explosion of growth of brewers, small brewers happening in communities all over the country.
Is this a good thing, growth like this?
It is a good thing because brewers bring people together. Think about, you know, when you go out to a restaurant and you taste a really great local beer and you're sharing experiences and you're making memories, and it brings people together. So I think it's a good thing for society altogether.
Okay. Darren, how did you meet Paul, and why is he here? Tell us a little bit more about the whole AK Beer Week.
Yeah, so basically, I actually just met Paul today, this morning, before we got on a helicopter. And took a helicopter trip and just went and checked out Juneau and all its sites and where we get our water source. A bunch of really cool things up there. And then also, so the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival is happening starting Friday, and that goes through Saturday.
That's up in Anchorage.
Up in Anchorage. Yeah, and so they're bringing Paul up there for this as a guest speaker, basically.
Okay.
And a judge. I have to judge the bar.
Yeah, he's a judge.
That's a tough job.
Paul, what are some of your first impressions of the Alaskan Brewing Company? If maybe you've been up here before.
I have. This is my third trip to Juneau, but I haven't been here in 20 years. So it's grown significantly since then, and it's really great to see. First impression is how the leadership that Alaskan has in environmental sustainability. They have a CO2 recapture program. Their work with, they get their electricity in a much more environmentally sound manner than all the brewers in the lower 48 that, you know, aren't maybe doing solar, I guess. But it's leadership, technical leadership, quality brewing leadership, and it's also a great place to come and have a beer.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you, how about the variety? Are they choosing the right beers to make these days?
I think they are. You know, it's the beer drinker is so much more knowledgeable than when I was here 20 years ago, and the beer drinker wants diversity. You know, one time they might want to drink an India Pale Ale, the next time they might want to drink a smoked porter, and so, you know, it all depends on the occasion. So having a wide variety of choices for people, as well as having new choices, you know, coming out with new brands all the time, it's important to stay relevant by putting out something that's new and different.
Okay. Melissa or Darren, you know, what does this mean for you guys having the director here? Have you had questions for him or anything like that?
It's been really excited. We had lunch and got to really pick his brain, talk about a lot of exciting things. One of the things we are talking about is, again, that growth and what that means for us, because Alaskan Brewing just celebrated 30 years. We were founded in 1986. And with our size and our age, what we're doing and where we are in the market is a little bit different than a lot of the newer breweries.
How about you, Darren?
Yeah, I mean, he's a wealth of knowledge. So it was really cool just to just sit and listen to him speak about the industry, because I feel like we're a little removed, and I think that can kind of be a benefit. So when he's here and he speaks so highly of us, I think that just feels really good. You know, to be a leader in the industry, and especially innovation and doing things like we do, it is different. I think it kind of keeps us in that top five as far as, like, you know, really good known breweries throughout the region. And just the knowledge, really. I'm just kind of a sponge. I'm learning as much as I can.
Oh, good. Paul, so it sounds like we get an A, the Alaskan Brewing Company does, for environmental stuff. Thinking about, you know, other successful breweries down south, what are they doing well these days?
You know, the besides engaging customers, we're seeing a lot of new tap rooms open up around new breweries. So they're creating community. So that's one thing. In the sustainability area, I think of brewers like Sierra Nevada, who has this this hot rot composting system. So all the grains, all the hops, all the food from the restaurant they have on site there in Chico, California, within 2 weeks, it's all compost. And they've also got their own hop fields and barley fields. That would be a little challenging here. But that would be an example of a leader. New Belgium Brewing Company would be another one on the sustainability side. In terms of quality beer, I don't know of any breweries that have more medals at the Great American Beer Festival than Alaskan.
Yeah, I think, we that's one of our claims. It's true.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Smoked Porter by itself has 21.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
And how would you guys, you know, we've heard about Smoked Porter, and a lot of us have tasted it. It's very delicious.
Yeah.
How would you describe its success?
Boy, you know, it's just one of those beers. It was, you know, one of the first smoked porters to hit the U.S. Jeff kind of resurrected that style again, even though it's been brewed in Germany for many, many years. You know, so it was kind of it could almost be an extreme beer back in the day, you know, when we first made that beer. Extreme beer is kind of almost like a category nowadays, but, you know, it was so different. And little did we know that it would age as well as it does. So that wasn't really on the radar. So we're really discovering that as long as that beer is in good cellared conditions, it'll hold up. So yeah, we're going to be reaching into some of those cellared beers from, you know, 1996, and they're still beautiful. They age just remarkably well. So I think that is part of it. It's that mystique. And we've been brewing that beer since 1988.
Do you guys want to hear a fun story about Smoked Porter, the
yes.
1988?
Uh-huh.
It has a 1989 on the bottle.
That's true.
And that's because at the time that we were brewing that the first time, everybody wanted their beer to be fresh. And for the most part, you do want your beer to be fresh. you don't want to drink an IPA from 1989.
No.
But Smoked Porter, it turns out, ages super well, as Darren mentioned. And so the second vintage of Smoked Porter, which was brewed in 1989, also was listed as 1989.
Okay. I didn't even know that. I'm still learning.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't, like, there's some local alder involved in the Smoked Porter?
Yeah, it's alderwood. Yeah. So, basically we get our alder chips. It's alderwood. It's a native wood here from, you know, primarily wood from Alaska. And so that's what we use to smoke our malt with and then brew that beer with, you know, a portion of that malt.
You know, a few things I've heard you say today, Paul, are sustainability and community. And it seems like you guys are doing well.
Yeah.
In that.
Feels like it.
Paul, any advice for the future for continued success for our local brewery here?
You know, I think they have to deal with a more competitive market. There's going to be new breweries in Juneau. There's going to be brewers in the other states that they're in who are competing for it. Fortunately, Alaskan has a lot of advantages, being from Alaska, being where there's romance. It's sort of the last frontier. There's a spirit of ruggedness and adventure that's associated with the brand. So I think they've got some advantages there. But the world, like anything, when something becomes popular, it becomes competitive.
And actually, thinking of that, you know, we do have a few more breweries coming online. Is it possible for them to all coexist in a community? And if so, how do they do that successfully?
Generally, the brewers see each other at festivals or bar, you know, hey, do you have any Cascade hops? I'm short this week. And the brewers help each other out. So it creates a network where in competition, there's still you know, a sense of working together, and we're all in this together to make craft beer grow and, you know, change the way people think about beer in this country. So absolutely there's room. You know, craft brewing is growing about 8% a year right now in volume, and that's, you know, and even though we've seen more than half the breweries in the country come online in the last 3 years, you know, we're seeing room for more.
Yeah. Okay. And he had mentioned how many breweries a day are opening?
2.3 in the U.S.
Okay. So AK Beer Week goes through this Saturday. Melissa, you want to give us a quick highlight of what's coming up?
Yeah. So tonight we're really excited. We're going to be tapping an English brown ale that's inspired by Samuel Smith. A lot of breweries around the state are doing beers inspired by Samuel Smith. We're also having Clint Farr, author of Beers of the North, doing a signing tonight from 4:30 to 6 p.m. at the brewery in Lemon Creek. Throughout the week, we're going to continue tapping some interesting beers. On Friday, you can try a little bit of all the special beers that we've had on tap. And on Saturday, we're doing the epic smoked porter tasting, which will have beers, as Darren mentioned, starting with the 1996 vintage and kind of through 2016. You get to taste how the beer ages and how it changes and evolves in that time. So it's a really fun thing to do if you've never tried it.
And where can people go for more information, Darren?
Yeah, alaskanbeer.com, and you go over to our events page, and they have every event listed, not just for what's going on in Juneau and at the brewery, but it's throughout the state. So every event pretty much centered around Alaska Beer Week or AK Beer Week is going to be on our events page, and also Facebook.
Well, thank you three for coming into the studio today. Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, thanks. This is great.
Getting thirsty. All right, thank you,
three.
Thanks, Scott.
I wasn't born for digging deep holes. I'm not made for paving long roads. I ain't cut out to climb high line poles, but I'm pretty good at drinking beer. I'm not the type to work in a bank. I'm no good at slapping on paint. Don't have a knack for making motors crank, no, but I'm pretty good at drinking beer. Hand me one more, that's what I'm here for. I'm built for having a ball. I love the nightlife, I love my Bud Light. I like them cold and tall. I ain't much on mowing thick grass. I'm too slow for working too fast. I don't do windows, so honey, don't ask. But I'm pretty good at drinking beer.
go-getter. Well, maybe I'm not. I'm not known for doing a lot. But I do my best work when the weather's hot, hot. I'm pretty good at drinking beer. So hand me one more, that's what I'm here for. I'm built for having a ball. I love the nightlife, I love my Bud Light. I like them cold and tall. Wasn't born for digging deep holes. I'm not made for paving long roads. I ain't cut out to climb high line poles, but I'm pretty good at drinking beer. I'm pretty good at drinking beer. I'll hand me one more, boys. That's what I'm here for.
2017 is the year to increase your earning power with the power of e-learning. College degree holders can earn up to 70% more over the course of their careers than non-college graduates. The University of Alaska Southeast offers online courses and degrees in accounting, business, and management. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu/som or call 796-6409 to speak with an advisor about spring 2017 registration.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday. It's about 33 degrees at the Juno Airport and about 22 minutes after the hour. And in the studio now is Sianne Murphy. She is the volunteer program coordinator for the Poetry Omnibus program. Very cool program here in the capital city. Welcome to the show, Sianne.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
It's nice to have you. If somebody doesn't know what the Poetry Omnibus is, can you tell us?
Well, it is a local juried poetry contest in which selected poems will have the honor of being displayed on capital city transit buses for one full year.
Yeah. So if you're not a bus rider, how would you describe it on the sort of the head? Above the head,
yeah, the area. Laminated advertisements and local public messages that kind of line the ceiling of the bus. There's little poems placed
mixed
on
in.
Every single city bus.
So it's art, not just advertising, but art is mixed in.
It is art, yes. And it is a wonderful way for local poets to engage with the community, share their art, and it gives passengers on the bus some really nice ways to reflect on their community and just the artistic aspect of what's going on.
Right. And I was thinking that, you know, a poem probably gets viewed by thousands and thousands of people. I mean, we have 30 some odd thousand people here in the city, but then a lot of people come here in the summer and take the bus. So,
yeah. And that is another nice aspect that the tourists that are on the bus, we've had lots of people comment. It's so nice to read the poetry and get some insight on the nature and the inspiration that exists in the locals here. So,
yeah, great program. How many people would you say participate every year?
Well, last year we had over 70 entrants, and there were 28 poems that were selected, and that's going to be the number of poems that are going to be selected this year too. So we have an adult category and a youth category, and the youth category is grades 3 through 12, and anyone over the grade 12 is considered an adult. So we just have a couple great groups of judges. Emily Wall and Ann Sutton will be judging the adult poems, and they were judges last year. And then the youth poems will be judged by Richard Stokes and Emily Willauer this year.
So. That's a great crew.
Yeah.
So submissions are due by January 31st.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple weeks left. What are sort of word limits and things like that?
So the great thing about the contest is every poem has to be 10 lines or less.
Okay.
So that it can accommodate space on this little area on the bus. So 10 lines or less, and that's including stanza breaks and line breaks and everything. The title gets its own line. So everything is all outlined in detail at the website that I created. It is junopoets.wordpress.com. And again, that's junopoets.wordpress.com. And all the contest rules and information, and then a link to the entry form is right on that website. Super easy to submit.
Is there a submission fee?
Well, the first poem is free, and you can submit up to 3 poems, and the second and third poem would cost you $2 each.
Okay. I see you have a couple examples with you. Yeah. Would you mind sharing those with
us? Sure. So these are from last year's, it's 2015 contest. These are a couple winners. The first one I'll read is by Beatrice Franklin, and it's called Autumn Siren. There's a chill in the air. Take an extra gulp to taste and relish the first drops of autumn. She still means to tease you with a bed of leaves, not meant for resting, but for raking. And then a youth poem by Serena Krupe is titled The River. The rushing, raging river, it flows so quickly. It twists and turns. It does a loopity-loop. At the end, it flows until the rushing river takes over again. It goes down, a raging waterfall. And this is a third grader that wrote this. So it's fun. You get a nice participation from kids of different age groups and adults of all ages, too.
So you've been associated with this program for a while now. You've been a judge even. Mm-hmm. What advice would you have to poets who may submit to this? What sort of poetry works well for being on a bus?
Well, anything suitable for public display, of course. But, it's a very personal thing, poetry, that you're sharing, whatever you're comfortable putting out there, what you want to contribute and share with the public. Certainly, we got a lot of entries that are nature-based because, a lot of people are inspired by this amazing place that we live in. So anything that you feel would be appropriate that you personally want to share and convey.
And may I ask for a few technical tips, too, like rhyme? Are you looking for that? Imagery?
Rhyme, imagery, those are all wonderful elements. Yes, the better the imagery, it gives people some nice entertainment. They can start daydreaming about what they just read. So, just good form. Haikus are great, for the competition. So anything that really you want to submit, just as long as it's 10 lines or less, we're anxious to read it and have you participate.
All right. Sounds like fun. So the poems that are submitted by the end of January here, when will those actually go up on the buses?
So it will be probably at the end of April. We're going to have a celebration where the winning poems will be read at the Valley Library Conference Room. And that date is escaping me right now. It's on the website. It will be April 18th, I think. It will be a Sunday.
Come back on the show and remind us, please.
Okay. But we're going to have a great reading and the public's open to attend. And we're hoping we get a lot of people participating. We have about 30 poems right now, so we're looking for some more.
Excellent. So the deadline is January 31st. Can you give us the website again, please?
Sure. It's junopoets.wordpress.com.
Okay. And this is sort of under the umbrella of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council,
right?
Oh,
yeah. So the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, Capital City Transit, Friends of the Juno Public Library, and the Printing Trade Company sponsor this wonderful event. So thanks to them for promoting this and sponsoring it for 10 years now. This
great.
Is the 10th year.
Oh, wow. So. Wow. So adults and youth categories, all the information is there on the website. The submission date is January 31st, the deadline. 10 lines or less. Have your work published on the buses of Juneau. Sounds pretty cool. Anything else you'd like to add, CN?
Oh, just thank you for having me on today.
Anytime. Thank you for running this great program.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 18th of January, 2017. It's the birthday of Peter Marc Roget, born London, 1779. He was a doctor for most of his life, and after he retired at the age of 61, he decided to devote himself to publishing a system of classifying words into groups based on their meanings. He had six categories, and within each one, many subcategories. The whole thing took him more than 10 years. He finally published it, his Thesaurus of English Words and Phrases, and at the last minute, he decided to include an index which helped readers find synonyms, and it was that that made his Thesaurus the most popular reference book of all time. It's the birthday of Joseph Farwell Glidden, born Charleston, New Hampshire, 1813, who rigged up an old coffee grinder to twist strands of wire around each other, and then he clipped off the protruding ends to make barbs. He invented barbed wire, which made him one of the richest men in the country and which brought an end to the Wild West and cowboys and cattle drives. It's the birthday of A.A. Milne, born London, 1882. Went to Trinity College on a mathematics scholarship, but he wanted to write. He wrote light verse, wrote plays. He was on holiday with his son Christopher Robin when he got an idea to write about the stuffed animals in his son's nursery, and especially the bear. He invented Eeyore, the donkey, and Tigger, and Piglet, and an owl named Owl, and Winnie the Pooh. First featured in A Christmas Story, came out December 1925, called The Wrong Side of Bees. By 1931, Winnie the Pooh was an enormous business, and nobody wanted anything by A.A. Milne except more stories about stuffed animals. And it's the birthday of Oliver Hardy, Norvell Hardy, born Harlem, Georgia, 1892, formed a partnership with Stan Laurel, Laurel and Hardy. They won an Oscar for a short film called The Music Box, in which they're trying to get a piano up a steep staircase. Here's a poem by Bill Jones entitled To Sarah, 1999. Nearly 16 years ago, you made your way into this world, calm and quiet, with none of the fuss or emergency of Sean and Nate. Mom didn't break a sweat. When you started crawling, you strutted, hands gating out like a Tennessee walker's, your head held high, eyes gleaming. You swam at 3, floating to the pool surface in Fontana and paddling away. Tonight, 15, you're boarding a plane to Ireland by yourself on your first flight, 7 hours in the dark across the Atlantic to land in Shannon at dawn. Backpack in place, you walk the long corridor beyond where Mom and I can go. We stand there, grinning, watching, and waving as you pass through security and emerge on the other side. To Sarah, 1999, poem by Bill Jones from his collection At Sunset Facing East, published by Apprentice House and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. and by Progressive, offering policyholders the option to bundle home and auto insurance coverage. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday. It's about 25 minutes until the top of the hour, and joining me in the studio now is Katrina Wolford. She is the owner of Taku Graphics, which is the publisher of Beers of the North, and that author is with us as well, Clint Farr. Welcome, Clint and Katrina, to the show.
Thank you.
Nice to have you both here. So a signing tonight, you can get a personalized, autographed picture, book of
or picture.
Beers,
or Clint picture. Is very flexible.
Yes, if somebody brings a picture in, I could sign it.
Headshots
yes.
of Clint Farr
or
signed.
Your pet monkey or whale. I don't know. Whatever you want signed, I'll do it.
Tonight at the Alaskan Brewery, we talked with the Alaskan Brewery crew a little bit earlier. That was fun. But this is part of AK Beer Week, 4:30 to 6 at the brewery tonight. So that's fun. Clint, tell us a little bit about Beers of the North if people haven't seen it yet.
Sure. Beers of the North is basically a compendium of the breweries in the state of Alaska. I think we got right around 27 now. This is the second edition, in fact. Our first edition came out. We immediately knew we had to update it. We got 7 new breweries here in the second edition. It's brand new. It's only been out for about a month or so now. So if you have, if you're looking for a good gift for the beer lover in your family or out of state, people may be coming up next summer for touring, this would be a great guidebook for them. So I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful little book. Katrina's group did a great job with the art and the layout and the formatting of the book. It's a gorgeous little guidebook, and hopefully the writing's not too bad either.
All right. Katrina, whose idea was this book? Did you pitch it to Clint? Clint pitch it to you? How'd this come to be?
Well, the first edition came to be when I was in Skagway I sponsor a writer's conference there, and I was sitting in the Skagway Brewing Company and talking to a friend, and it's just, you know, obviously it was the appropriate place to come up with an idea like that. And then we asked Clint to help with some of the writing on the first edition, and it was so great. I wanted to keep the writing, you know, as close to Alaska as possible, and so when the second edition came out, he took more of a role. So, yeah, the second edition is out, and we will just keep updating.
All right. Was this fun to put together, Clint?
Well, of course it's fun to put together. I mean, the research for a beer book, as you might imagine, is pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had a little trip out this summer and spent some time at the various breweries. I won't go into the specifics of where I went. Kind of secretive. Yeah. And, okay, so I went down to the Kenai and spent some time at Saukasic, Kenai Peninsula Brewing, and had a wonderful time just kind of incognito running around and seeing what they had to offer, and hopefully some of those touches make it into the book.
Do you go incognito when you go into the brewery, or are you like, hey, I'm here writing a book?
Incognito.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that it's a review or anything, but I think, you don't have people pouring over, you know, falling over themselves to give you beer necessarily, so you kind of get the real experience.
What sort of surprised you most, I guess, putting this book together about the state of beer in our state, if you will?
Well, like nationally, it just continues to grow. I think since even this new edition, the second edition, I think we got another brewery in Homer that just came out that will have to be in the third edition. You know, it just continues to expand. I think it's a very exciting time for beer lovers, and it's going to be interesting to see if this bubble continues, if there will be a contraction here at any time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are a couple of your favorite beers in the state?
Well, I think that's a really good question, and it's really funny. St. Elias Brewing Company in Soldotna is not in the book. They had never answered our surveys, but they have a delicious cask-conditioned red ale that's out of this world that they've served, that I've had the honor of having. It's really like one of my favorites. Midnight Sun Brewing in Anchorage does a really good triple. That's fantastic. And also the King Street Brewery in Anchorage has a really clean set of just very standard ales that I really enjoy. And, of course, Alaskan Brewing has got their black IPA is one of my favorites.
Got it.
Yeah.
And tonight at the brewery, you guys are going to be tapping an English brown ale. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct.
What is an English brown?
Well, I think it's Newcastle Brewing. It has an English brown you can go find in the stores that has the gold foil on the top. And it's a lot like an amber, except, of course, brown in color. It's very malty, so there's a lot of sweetness. And it's just absolutely delicious. And, you know, it's not as, it doesn't hit you quite like a porter might, but it's a full flavored kind of sweet beer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Katrina, putting a book together like this, it's beautiful, well put together, flows, pictures, everything. What might we not know about the challenges of putting a book like this together from a sort of technical point of view?
For this book, you know, for the things that I publish, it's important to me to keep it within the state. So, you know, you put together a team of people from, you know, a co-author to an editor to a proofreader to an artist to a book designer, which those are things that people don't think about. Like when you look at text on a page or the way that text flows with a graphic, someone has designed that very specifically. It's not like a Word document. It's intentional. Fonts are intentional. So I think the design is very important, and actually this is designed by Sarah Asper-Smith, and her husband Mitch Watley did the illustrations. So that aspect of putting the book together is sometimes overlooked, you know, and there's proofreading like crazy, you know, just to make sure you didn't, you know, misspell or do any of that. And then logistics of getting books to Alaska and then distribution, you know, all of those things have several components, but...
And it's not just to make it look pretty. The illustrations are actually useful. We have little pint glasses that represent the ABV, the alcohol by volume per beer, some of the beers of note for each brewery. And it's kind of a fun way to give people a visual representation of what they were about to drink and that sort of thing. And so I think it's really well done that way.
So I like how you said you like to keep things within the state. And then it seemed like every name you mentioned was a local designer, a local artist, local writer.
We try really hard, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So if somebody purchased this book, they're supporting all, it seems like, local stuff.
Yeah.
Great. And they can do that when and where?
At 4:30 tonight at the Alaska Brewing Tasting over at Lemon Creek, 4:30 to 6. We'll be signing books. You come by and get one and taste some English brown.
Sounds like fun. Katrina Wolford, Clint Farr, thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No, we're good. Thank you so much,
all right,
Scott.
Anytime.
Thanks, Scott.
I don't play.
you listening to a Juno Afternoon here on January 18th. It's about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. And in the studio now, our photographer, Ben Huff. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you.
And also Jackie Manning. She is the curator of exhibits at the SLAM. Welcome to the show, Jackie.
Thanks for having us.
And I should have mentioned that Ben is also on the board of the SLAM.
I am, yeah, newly on the board in the last few months.
All right, nice to have you.
Thanks.
Jackie, can we start with you? Alaska Positive, tell us when it went up and what's it all about?
So Alaska Positive has been up for the last couple months, and it is an exhibit that I believe this is its 46th year, and it's a biennial statewide photography exhibit. So we have photographers from all over the state apply to this exhibit. We brought up a juror, Larry McNeil, and he made a selection of, I believe it's 36 photographs we have. And the exhibit is going to be up through this Saturday, so it's your last week to see it, before it travels to Sitka, and then it'll continue on a statewide traveling for different openings. So, yeah, so almost coming down, and we have Ben's lecture. We have two of his pieces in Alaska Positive this year, and they're both beautiful. So I'm happy he's going to be talking about his work.
Tell us about your pieces, Ben.
The two pieces that are in the show this year are both from an ongoing project in the Aleutian Island of Adak, which is what I'll kind of be starting off talking about tomorrow night, a project that I've had, Jackie and I are actually just talking about it, something I've been talking about doing for a really long time. It's been in my brain since I lived in Fairbanks and finally made my first trip out there, not this past summer, but the prior, and I've been out there a few times since, and I'll be showing pictures from that body of work and sort of talking about where I'm at and kind of what I'm looking for and where it goes from here, and then a little bit of a Juno thing that I'm working on, and then kind of wrapping up with the Alaska Positive show and sort of, if I could be so bold, the sort of state of photography in Alaska and sort of kind of wrap it up with that exhibition as it's closing on Saturday.
And this sort of question goes out to both of you. Is there sort of an underlying theme behind Alaska Positive?
You know, the only sort of rule is you have to be an Alaskan resident to submit a piece to Alaska Positive. And what really, I think every 2 years, what's really different is the juror and the juror's selection. This year, Larry McNeil, when he made the selection, he helped lay out the exhibit as well. So what photographs are next to each one, you know, so kind of how the whole exhibit sort of flows was specific to his view. But that is, I think, what changes every time Alaska Positive comes around is the juror and what they select. So.
And they're not always Alaskans. Right?
No. Frequently, you know, we bring up, we've actually brought up incredible photographers over the years, usually, you know, internationally known photographers. And Larry McNeil, he was raised in Juneau, and I think this is one of only a couple Alaskan jurors that we've had, so it was great to bring him back up.
I think him and the late Barry McWain, who was the curator up at the museum in Fairbanks, who died unexpectedly a few years ago, I think him and Larry are the only two Alaska jurors, if I'm not mistaken. But we've had sort of some titans. John Baldessari was here, Richard Misrach was here. Couple names are escaping me now. Les Crims was here. Bill Owens was here. I mean, some of the titans of the medium have come and juried that exhibition over the years. So it's a big deal.
This may be a big question, and we don't have a ton of time. But if you had to sort of look at the common denominator of a lot of the winners over the years, is there one, and how would you describe that?
I don't know that there is. I mean, like Jackie said, it's really sort of based on who the juror is. I mean, some are going to look, you know, sort of straight documentary. Some are going to be a little bit more, you know, fictional or constructed based. Some are going to have a very solid nature view of Alaska. Some may have something more of a contemporary view. It's really hard to say. And that's, I think, sort of the nice thing about it is it is, you know, it's always really solid work, but you can always expect a really different exhibition. You know, it's not a staid thing. I mean, every 2 years it's going to be something that's challenging and it's different, and it's different photographers and different work and different perspective, and it's always a pulse of what's going on in the state in photography and who's doing what and where they are and what are the stories that they're telling. And that's as a photographer, that's the thing that I've always been the most drawn to, whether I've had pieces in the show, whether I've submitted to the show. When Alaska Positive comes around, it's always just a thrill to see who's doing what and where. I mean, it sounds sort of silly, but it's, yeah, that's the heart of it.
Well, I wish we had more time, but we can go to your lecture to hear more, can't we? When is that again?
Tomorrow, 5:30 at the SLAM. It's free. Please.
And it's in the auditorium space. And, yeah, like Ben said, it's free. It's going to be recorded by K2. And, we definitely encourage you to go. And I do have a couple of just quick plugs for the Friends. So the Friends have hosted this lecture series for Alaska Positive, and they also have an upcoming event or a series of music that features Rodgers and Hart and Rodgers and Hammerstein starting January 28th, 2 to 2:30 at the APK Lecture Hall. And that's going to be going on through April. But you can go to the Friends of the Alaska State Library Archives and Museum website, which is foslam.org, foslam.org, and also they have a Facebook page. So lots of upcoming things the Friends are promoting.
Jackie Manning and Ben Huff, thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll see you tomorrow, Friday, 5:30 at the SLAM for this.
Thursday.
Oh, today's Wednesday, right?
It's the Monday off Thursday. That's throwing us, yeah.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, about 6 minutes till the top of the hour. And joining me in the studio now is Megan Allman. She is the director of ORCA under the umbrella of SAIL. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah. And also Jeffra Clow. She's the director of sales and marketing in the Snow Sports School up at Eagle Crest. And I think we're going to get a joint update on Eagle Crest and talk about adaptive skiing today. Welcome to the show, Jeffra.
Great. Thanks for having us in the studio this afternoon, Scott.
Anytime. How's it up on the mountain?
You know, it's good. It's winter up there. We've got more snow in the forecast. And, you know, we're in the middle of January already. So we are just rocking our way through some pretty amazing events that we have going on. So January is Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month. And we've had a lot of people coming up this January so far and learned how to ski and snowboard. But we've got two great events coming down the road that we want to talk about this afternoon.
Excellent. And what's the first one?
So the first one, just want to do a plug for the 35th Annual Learn to Ski Weekend. This is for third, fourth, and fifth graders who have never skied before. It's sponsored by Mendenhall Auto Subaru, and we certainly appreciate their ongoing support. But applications are available online at skijuno.com. and they are due on Monday at noon. And then the Learn to Ski for Free weekend is January 28th and 29th. So if you know a third, fourth, or fifth grader who has never skied before, here's a great opportunity. Find the application online at skijuno.com and get it into us by Monday.
Okay. Megan, tell us a little bit about ORCA and the Adaptive Ski Program.
Yeah, so ORCA has a great partnership with Eagle Crest, and we're up there every Saturday and Sunday doing adaptive ski and snowboarding lessons. This weekend, we have an event coming up called Learn to Adapt Day on Sunday. It's from 10 to 2 on Sunday. We'll be up there, and it's open to the Juno community. So if you are curious about adaptive skiing and snowboarding, stop on by, and we'll have the adaptive gear out, and we'll take it up on the hill to give people a little taste of what it's like. We'll get the sit skis out and the outriggers, and if people want to try out a sit ski lesson, we are there to do that.
Okay. I know you've been doing this for a while, Megan. What draws you to this field?
It's so much fun. It's a great way to be outside in the wintertime when the days are a little darker. Just get up there and get on the snow. And it's also great to, you know, pass along what I enjoy doing and skiing and whatnot with people that are new to the sport, and watching the aha moment come on when people, you know, when it clicks and people get they can do those turns and they can stop before they get to the lift line. It's really cool.
It seems like anytime I see the ORCA crew, sail crew, they're just having fun.
That's what we like to do.
A lot of smiles.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about up there. And we just want to make sure that Eagle Crest is accessible to everyone. So again, the Learn to Adapt Day is Sunday from 10 to 2. There'll be information up on our website at skijuno.com. But come explore skiing and or adaptive skiing and snowboarding. We'll be out on the Porcupine Chair.
That's
and,
right.
Come on up and try out that bi-ski or that monoski.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of obvious, but who would you say would benefit from this event on Sunday? Who should come and check this out, would you
well,
say?
Well, the Juno community, everybody, whether people have disabilities or not, come out and check it out. When we get the adaptive gear out, people kind of look around and see what this is all about. So this is a great opportunity to get a little more familiar with what adaptive equipment is and what it can provide for people with disabilities on the hill.
Okay. Thank you both so much for coming on the show. Anything else that you'd like to add?
Just keep an eye on skijuno.com for all of our updates, and we'll see everyone on the mountain this weekend.
And we can probably find both of you on Facebook, both Eagle Crest and Sail and ORCA.
Yes, that's correct.
And Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
All the fun social medias.
Great. Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.